Welcome to Cowboy Church with your host, Russ Weaver, and Susie McIntyre. So sit back and enjoy some good singing, some great testimony, and some good preaching. Welcome to Cowboy Church.
Hi, I'm Susie McIntyre.
And I'm Russ Weaver.
And here we are, another episode of Cowboy Church, and we are so glad that you've joined us.
We really are. And I want to pay Susie a compliment real quickly here.
What's that?
I think you're the perfect lady.
Oh.
Yeah, I do. And James chapter 3, verse 2, I think it's verse 2, it talks about the perfect man is able to bridle his tongue and the things he says. Hmm. And you know, Susie, in all the time we've been together, I've never heard her say one cuss word ever. You know, so you're nearly perfect.
Oh, yeah, I'm right. That really makes me perfect. But if I talk about other people or if I gossip, well, that's not as bad as a curse word, huh?
Well, I don't know. I think you should leave a compliment alone. You know, you try to compliment a girl,
Russ,
she's just gonna come out with
thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. There you go. Hey, you know, the reason we have Cowboy Church is seriously, the Bible challenges us to try and attempt and go for perfect, understanding that I never will. We had a perfect display of it here. I tell Susie she's a perfect girl, and she goes, oh, no, I know all my fun, you know. But we do that. We do that. And part of what we're trying to accomplish here is to challenge us towards perfection. There's got to be a few goals, don't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we all can improve. We need to love one another. We need to love out of a perfect and pure heart. And sometimes that is telling people the truth and complimenting. But we hope that you get something out of Cowboy Church every time you watch. And most of all, that you're encouraged, that you're uplifted, and that you have a wonderful day full of Christ. Let's go to Cowboy Church and see what it's all about.
Now Jesus is turning the windmills. He's turning them out on the plains. When Jesus is pumping the water, you'll never be thirsty again. A lady rode up to the windmill. Her heart was heavy and sad, and sin had been her companion, and much of her life had been bad. At noontime, a stranger came riding up to the windmill that day. Not turning, the wind is silent and still, and there will be no more water until the wind turns the wheel. I can give you some water, dear lady, and you'll never be thirsty again. It flows from a fountain. It'll wash your life of all sin. Now the men in your life have brought sorrow, and the shame it shows on your face. She knew then that she'd met the Master, and walked now under His grace. Jumped on her pony, her sins washed whiter than snow, and she wanted to tell all the people from whom all her blessings would flow. She told them that she had met Jesus out Jesus is turning the windmills. He's turning them out on the plains. When Jesus is pumping the water, you'll never be thirsty again. You'll never be thirsty again.
I love that song because it reminds me of how Jesus works in us in our spiritual life, just like a windmill produces water, that we're supposed to produce those fruits that will bless other people in our life. And that was my first try at a Western song. On this album, I put three songs together. One was that you probably really won't care for, but it's called The Everlasting Hills of Oklahoma. Did y'all even know that we have hills in Oklahoma? Anybody ever been in the hills of Oklahoma? Well, when I was little, we used to say, well, let's go up in the mountains and look around. Well, we found out really quick when we got to go into Colorado and Montana that we really didn't have mountains. But my daddy always said that if you tried to build a mile of fence on those hills, you'd think they were a mountain. They're really, really rugged. We've got a lot of rocks and trees, rattlesnakes, and all those kind of things that make it really, really interesting to live around there. Ticks and chiggers and things like that. The other one is Don't Fence Me In. I don't know about y'all, but I love these legendary songs. They're songs of lots of Western heritage. So I'd like to sing these songs for you.
Everlasting hills of Oklahoma, they hold a million treasures to be found. Gold and grain on hills of green, wave to valleys cool and clean. Too bad some folks have never seen the everlasting hills of Oklahoma. The everlasting tales of Oklahoma are told of clouded statues in the sky. Pioneers who long have gone, their wagon wheels still rumble. Falls upon the everlasting hills of Oklahoma.
Y'all like to have a little land under your feet? Huh? Listen to this song.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose. Let me straddle my own saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
Some of these dancing Baptists would be out there right now, wouldn't you, Pastor? You're thinking about it, ain't you?
I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
See, Joshua, as for me and my house, now, I don't think that just happened out of inspiration of the moment. I have no proof, biblical proof of this, but if I'm guessing, and I am guessing, this is what my guess would be. The night before, Joshua gathers his family together. He says, look, here's the deal. Tomorrow I'm going to challenge the people. We're going to step into the promised land, and I want you guys to be first. And when I say these words, as for me and my house, when I say those, before I finish, we will serve the Lord. You get up and you get on this side of the line and in a hurry. You got it? Making decisions isn't about the whimsical moment that you're living in right now. Making decisions is the most important activity that you have in your entire life. It's important for us to learn decisions. So I went through some Bible and learning how to make decisions. The first thing about a decision is this. If it's time to make a big decision, if it's time to make a good decision, if it's time to make an impulsive decision, here's the most important quality, is the moral quality of the decision that you're going to make. When nobody's around to watch you, the integrity of the decision you make shows the moral quality that you have. We all should be making decisions when nobody's looking that would be the same decision when everybody's inspecting. There's a moral quality. The reason that people think the church is full of hypocrites is because there's too many people. Wait a second. You want to be careful here. There's too many of us that make really good decisions when we're here and everybody's watching. And then we go out and we start doing business and we don't keep the same quality and character that we demonstrate at church, and people call us hypocrites. Now, look, we've got hypocrites in the church. But I'm telling you, there are hypocrites everywhere and you can't avoid them. They just have invaded everything. So don't hold it against the church when there's hypocrites. You come in and make a decision that is the right decision before God on every time it's time to make a decision. It's based on moral quality. You say, well, what is moral quality? It's written in the Bible. See, when we make good decisions, the reason we make good decisions is we have biblical foundation for the decisions that we're going to make. If we're making fast decisions and they're big decisions and we feel pressure about it, don't make it. You can wait. Big decisions don't have to be made quickly. Here's the other thing. Here's some filters. And get out your pencil. Here's some scriptures for you to look up. Some of the filters we run these through have to do with this. First of all, here's the Bible filters. And I'm going to give you some verses on how to do your Bible filters. Proverbs 11:14. It's your reading assignment. Proverbs 12:15. Proverbs 13:10. Proverbs 15:22, Proverbs 19:20, Proverbs 24:6. Here's the second filter we should run our decisions through. Run our decisions through history. History is a great teacher for us to learn how to make good decisions. Look, in America right now, we are in such a vulnerable position because people are making decisions that don't understand history. And I'm gonna talk really straightforward to you for just a moment. I don't use this pulpit to be political hardly ever, because it's not about politics, it's about godly principles. But I think we're at a point right now where I can use a godly principle to point out a deadly cancer that is trying to enter America, and we need to be aware of it, and that deadly cancer is called socialism. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about it. History has shown that socialism doesn't work. Go read it anywhere, anyway, it doesn't work. When I was a kid, when I first became aware of socialism,
we had a man from Cuba came to our church, and they always stayed at our house, and he preached at our church. And when he was at our house, he said, "Don't ever let communism in. Don't ever let socialism in, because that's the predecessor to communism." He says it was so terrible when they took over Cuba. They destroyed the churches. They assassinated the people. And he says, "I was there. I saw it. I played on piles of dead people in my backyard that were church people." He says, "Don't tell me socialism is a nice thing, and don't tell me communism is okay, and don't you ever be deceived by thinking that it is a good thing. It's a deadly thing, and it's an ungodly thing, and it's a devil thing." And you remember that. Man, he put it into my mind. Some kid having to play on a pile of dead bodies because there's no place else to play, and he escaped and came to America because it's a home of the free and the brave. And I don't want that stuff to happen. I don't want them to come in and tell them that the church has no place in government, because it does. We have influence in government, and the influence we have is the influence that came in when they put the Constitution together, and they put it together so that it was Bible-based, and it's been a tremendous document. The second most important document that has ever been throughout history is the Constitution of the United States. It is held firm, it is held strong, and while other nations fumbled and messed up, it's still a foundation that works because it's based on biblical principles. Amen. Now, you just need to understand that when people begin to hint about that stuff, that they're leading us down a road that history says is foolishness. Now, let me just say this. Some people that say that we learn from experience and that's the great teacher. The problem with that, it's false. We don't learn from experience. I will tell you that if you just take marriages in the United States, if somebody gets divorced the first time, it's easier for them to get divorced the second time. You'd think they'd learn. The third time, it's easier to get. In fact, by the time they get to their fifth marriage, the chance of it surviving is less than 5%, give or take 10%. So we don't learn from experience, but we can learn from history. Now, I say that we don't learn from experience. There are some people who take their experience, but they go to the Word of God, they go to the source that great wisdom comes from, and they can learn how to put things together and how to make good decisions. But experience is not the thing that teaches them. What experience teaches us is that we can survive this, and I'll do it again. I don't know if you'll like that too well, but it's a truth. So the filters that we run it through is Bible, we run it through history, we run it through experience, and then we run it through expertise. Here's the thing. There's an old saying that practice makes perfect. James, the guy who used to play quarterback for the Tennessee Titans that goes to our church, James Ritchie, he made this statement at our bull riding the other night. He did the devotions there, and he says, "How many of you have heard that practice makes perfect?" "Yeah, yeah, yeah." He said, "Well, I got to tell you something. That is totally wrong." He said, "Practice doesn't make perfect, because if you're practicing the wrong thing, what it does, it keeps you, it puts the wrong thing into your mind and into your muscle memory, to where it's harder to overcome and it's harder to learn how to do it right because you've been practicing wrong for so long." He said, "Perfect practice makes perfect." So he said, just practice doesn't make perfect. Listen, if you want some expertise, you really need to ask somebody besides yourself. I mean, that sounds so easy. And if you want to be... I really laugh at how simple great wisdom is. Great wisdom would say this, and just think about this, and it's a deep truth that when you walk out of here, you're going to go, "I knew that." Here's the thing. If I want to be good at something, I have a better chance at being good at it if I go to somebody who knows what they're doing and have achieved at it than I do going to somebody who has studied it and never tried it. Why in the world do you ever want to look at your spiritual life through the eyes of people who are total heathens? Just 2 cents worth. Actually, that's worth a buck and a half. Here's a couple of things to consider when you're making decisions. First, I could never do that auctioneer thing. We just went, 25, yeah. I've always been amazed by the ability to do that. I think the auctioneers were way ahead of their time. They were actually the first rappers that ever, they took. It's between you and me. Stay focused. So we have a moral quality, then we have a master plan. Here's the second half of the master plan. The first one is the filters that you run it through. Second one is the presentation. We need to present our decisions to God. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. What is He talking about in all your ways? All your decisions that you're about to make, present them to God, and He will what? Direct your paths, or He will give you answers to the decisions that you're about to make. Acknowledge Him. Put Him as a priority in your life and in your thinking. The greatest thing that could ever happen to you in your decision making is this, is for God to go, hey, when we bought this facility, I was praying about, God, what do we do next? I told God, I said, I don't know how to lead these people. I don't know what to do next. I need your decisions. I know something needs to be done. I've looked everywhere I can look. I don't know what I need to do. And my dad used to do this deal, just for those of you who haven't heard this. He'd put his hand up behind my back, and he would talk quietly, and he would say,
yes, you need to.
At least that's what everybody else was thinking, he said. Just kind of a mumble deal. And I felt the same presence. Looking at what we should do next as a church, and I heard these words come into my consciousness of, don't worry, Russ, you're not going to get credit for this one. Isn't that not the greatest answer in the world? Is that not the greatest answer? The next time I heard it is after we'd built a place and I was concerned how everything is working. And it was this. Hey, do you realize that I gave you this facility and people come to this facility and pay so that they can put on your outreaches for your church? How good is that? I never thought of that before. Now listen, the greatest thing that can happen to you is for God to get involved in your business and give you a directive. And when God gives you a directive, sometimes it's an affirmation, do you realize? And sometimes it's a directive.